Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you with us for another Friday of great garden information. Today we have Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company in Randolph, Wisconsin, celebrating 100 years in business. Boy, started as a seed company, took root in Randolph back in 1907, still family owned, and is now, what do you send out now? Dick, 8 million copies or?
Well, the Jung catalog, it's only about 3.5 million, but we do have other catalog titles that have joined the family in the last 10 or 15 years. And so between the Jung catalog and all the other eight catalogs that we publish now, we have about 8 million catalogs that we send out.
So, wow.
Reasonable size business, I guess you'd say.
So, and five garden centers, right?
Located five on? Garden centers. Yeah, we have the original one was in Randolph, was started as kind of an offshoot of the mail order business. Had a lot of people driving in, and then in 1988, my dad thought that it would be great to start a chain of garden centers, and so the first one was Stevens Point, and then we bought the garden centers in Madison from the old seed company, and so we now have five. We have three in the Madison area and Randolph and Stevens Point. So seems to be a good combination.
Well, I think I've visited all. I haven't visited the Stevens Point one yet. That's the only one I haven't made yet. Tell you what, if you have a question for Dick, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And Sue from Waupaca is already online, so let's go to Sue. Hi, thank you for calling, Sue.
Good morning.
Good morning.
With this warmer weather and now the colder weather, it looks like the buds of the apples and the pear and the cherry trees look like they're ready to pop out. And I worry about then when we have subsequent cold and frost, how low a temperature can it get before the blossoms are adversely affected and do not produce fruit?
It's right around the freezing point. I mean, if it gets much below freezing, it may not completely destroy the fruit, but it'll misform it. And with some fruit, it does take the fruit right off if it gets below freezing. So this has really been a strange year where we get the really warm weather in late mm-hmm. March, and everybody and everything gets going really early, and then we get the snow and the cold weather. You know, hopefully we're past the major cold spells, because you're right, the trees are ready to pop. I've seen some trees in blossom already, and mm-hmm. so especially the peaches and the apricots, they do blossom very early, and a late hard frost will take all the fruit away. So, and there's really not a whole lot you can do to protect the tree unless you just get out and, I mean, there are orchards that will frost protect with irrigation systems, but it's really impractical for a homeowner to try and do that. So I guess you just have to hope that we don't get that really cold weather now that the blossoms are out. I mean, because as long as the blossoms aren't fully expanded, the fruit really can take a little bit of cold weather. But if it goes below frost, we're hurting.
All right. There you have it, Sue. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Deb in La Crosse, thank you for calling. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. I have a question about, I believe they're zinnias, but they're called Magellans. And I found them a couple years ago, and they seem to come out later in the season. They're for potting.
Great.
And they're beautiful. They're those big 5-inch colorful plants. And I have a hard time finding them, and I'm trying to maybe think I should plant them from seed.
Yeah, the zinnias actually can be planted from seed in the garden, and they will blossom a little bit later than if you start them. I mean, there's still time to start some of those. In fact, any of the flowers can still be started, and you'll have a little head start. But, there are a lot of series of the different flowers that come out, and the Magellan was one of the zinnias that came out, and I'm just trying to get the catalog open to the
to the right
zinnia
number.
Page, because I know we had Magellans at one time. See, in the seed business, the seed is produced in areas, and the new series are bred in areas where we have a much longer growing season, and so we're kind of at the mercy of those seed companies as to whether they have them. And there are only two reasons that you drop something out of a catalog once you have it. First, the first reason would be it didn't sell. because we do square analysis on the catalog. And the second thing was if the producers that breed and raise the seed decide to discontinue it, then we don't have a source of the seed. So I don't see the Magellans in here. But I know that they have been in the catalog in past, and they may be in the Seymour catalog, which is one of our sister catalogs, but they're not in the Magellan catalog.
Do you have a website?
Yes, actually, we do have a website. The website is www.jungseed.com.
Okay,
and
well, thank you.
You can actually get to all the other catalogs by going to the other link button on that site.
Well, those Magellans are just adorable, and I hope I can find them.
Thanks, Deb.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Appreciate it. Dana in Amro, it is your turn. Hi, Dana.
Hello there. My question is about something called a hybrid elm and how reliable it is in Wisconsin.
Well, the hybrid elms are elms that were developed in reaction to the Dutch elm disease. And the old American elm was used because it had a beautiful vase shape. It didn't get the globe-shaped canopy that a lot of trees get. It sort of had a vase shape, and so it made a great street tree because the branches would come up and kind of make a canopy for around roadsides. The elms that have been developed, the hybrid elms, which were hybrids between the American and the Chinese elm, and there are several of them, have very, they're very fast growing, but they don't have the same vase shape that the old American elm used to have. But they are pretty trees. I know there's one called Sapporo Gold, and there are several of them, and they are resistant to the Dutch elm disease, but they don't have the beautiful structure that the old American elm does. But they are pretty trees. They usually have a golden fall color, and they are fast growing.
Because I recently invested in a bunch of ash trees, and now I'm worried about the horror that's coming, and I'm thinking about planting some backups in case these guys go down on me in, another 5 or 10 years.
Right. And I think that's true, too. I mean, even three, four years ago, if somebody asked me what was one of the best-growing fast trees for a front lawn, I would have said the ash because it is. It has good hardwood. It has deep roots so that you don't have to worry about growing grass underneath it. And it just was a good all-around fast-growing tree. But then something comes along and, the emerald ash borer is a death sentence to the ash tree. And so, it's a good idea if you're planting a lawn planting a landscape not to use all of the same tree because from time to time these things happen. And so if you've got some maples and some honey locust and maybe even some elms, if it takes one of the trees, it may not take all of them.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. A tree like the Sapporo Gold, it's a fast-growing tree, so it's probably not going to live as long as the old American elm.
No, and it does have a little bit of a weaker wood. I mean, that's a kind of a rule of thumb that the faster the tree, the less dense the wood is. But the hybrid elms that have been developed are actually pretty nice trees. But they're not anything out of the usual globe-shaped trees. I mean, they have nice fall color, but they don't have the vase shape of the old American elm. So, they're great trees, fast-growing trees. They have nice fall color, but they just don't have that beautiful habit that the old American elm had.
Thanks, Dana. Appreciate the call. Keith in Montford, it's your turn now. Hi, Keith.
Hi. I got a question about sweet potatoes.
Okay.
We have not had good luck with them in past years. I think we're a little far north. And we now have some greenhouse structures, polyethylene-covered hoop frame type things. And I'm just wondering, does it make any sense to try again raising sweet potatoes inside a greenhouse or a hoop house?
Boy, I've never heard of them doing that. The sweet potatoes, the tubers start to form. Well, they're actually tuberous roots. They are tubers, I guess. Start to form in reaction to the day length, and so I know in our area we can get pretty good yields on some of the sweet potatoes that we sell, but I'm not sure whether they would I wouldn't see that there would be a problem growing them in a greenhouse, but you'd have to, I mean, are you thinking about growing them in ground beds?
Yes.
Yeah, then I think you'd have no trouble at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Should be good.
Yeah.
So there may be a benefit from trying it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can extend the season quite a bit longer by having, you know, even having some kind of a protection over the garden. A lot of people use unheated greenhouse-type structures over, you know, they're called tunnels, where they aren't big enough to get into, but they put them up over certain crops so that they can keep the crops from freezing or from and growing longer, and then they get a much longer, much larger product out of it.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, I'm familiar with those.
Mm-hmm. So I think it would work.
Okay. Can we try any longer season varieties if
no,
we're going to do this, or just stay with the 90-day stuff?
I would stay with the shorter ones, because if you get into those longer day ones, the longer season ones, you have to have a longer season to do that. I would still stay with the short maturity varieties.
Yeah, and should we ventilate it well, like we were doing tomatoes in a greenhouse, or do we want it shut up, or how?
You want to ventilate it during the day, because you don't want it getting really hot underneath that tunnel or in the greenhouse.
Right.
But as long as there's some air exchange so that you get the carbon dioxide that the plants need to grow,
mm-hmm.
They'll be fine.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. I had a friend who was in Alaska
mm-hmm.
in the summertime and one of the fairs, and went to one of the fairs and looked at the produce.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable the size of the cabbage.
Yeah, because they have these really long days, so they get a lot of sunlight. And because they do, I mean, the more sunlight you get, the more photosynthesis that takes place. And so the produce that they get in Alaska, even though they have a very short growing season, gets to be really, really large.
Yeah. Huge.
Yeah.
Paul in Duluth, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Paul.
Hi, I'm just watching my dog scare away a deer. first of all, I want to compliment Jung Seed Company and your guest for that wonderful catalog for the 100th anniversary. And I ordered a whole bunch of seeds. I have... I started my chilies. I planted three different varieties indoors, and they are now about 3 inches tall. And I'm wondering how soon I could start to, harden them off.
These are chili peppers?
Yeah.
Okay. You can take them outside when it's like... I would say above 50 degrees. I mean, they're going to be slower growing, but they get the sunlight then. And you can do that for up to 2 to 3 weeks, I mean, until it's time to plant them out. And another thing that you can do, too, is if you've got black plastic or some kind of plastic that you cover the ground with so that you get some of the heat that comes in and... gets the ground heated up underneath, which will store the energy, then you can get the plants planted out much faster. And if you're going to have a cold snap come, then you just take an old sheet or a piece of plastic or something and throw it over those plants, and the heat from the ground will actually keep the plants from freezing.
Okay.
So
one other thing. I haven't planted them yet. I do all container gardening.
Okay.
Again, mainly because of the deer.
Right.
But I want to plant, I ordered snow peas and green beans, and I just built the trellis for them. Can I go ahead and plant those now?
Sure. Yeah, the peas can be planted anytime the ground is ready, is warm enough to plant. You're from Minnesota, right?
Yeah, but, you know, here in Duluth, it's been fairly warm and sunny.
Yeah, well, peas will germinate in pretty cold temperatures, so peas can be started really early. I mean, they'll do very well. The beans, I'd probably wait another 2 weeks, but the peas for sure can be started. And things like spinach,
Yeah, I've done that. I've done spinach, parsley, and romaine.
Yeah, the lettuces can be planted when it's cold outside, too. And if you get a cold snap, you just throw a blanket over them, and that'll keep them from freezing. So.
Hey, great. And again, congratulations. That catalog is a keeper.
Yeah, the person that lays our catalog out did a lot of research, and that was really kind of a work of joy because I knew some of the history of the company, but in digging back into the archives, we found some really old articles and some old record books and things, and it was really kind of a neat experience to dig back into the history of the company. We actually did a DVD of the company, which is available also, that about a half an hour long, that really, I think, turned out really well and explains the whole history of Jung Seed Company. You know, Grandpa
a lot of
was
fun.
Grandpa was really a one of a kind person. I mean, he was really an entrepreneur, and he was very focused on things. And so, you know, as far as the business is concerned, he was just, you know, the type of person that you need to get a business like this going. And so, you know, it was really a lot of fun. And Dottie did a great job of laying the catalog out. You know, we put 16 extra pages in the catalog, and then interspersed the history and the old catalog covers and a lot of old pictures in there. And I think you're right. I think the catalog might be a collector's item at some time, because it really was a work of joy.
Thanks, Paul. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Paul. Appreciate it very much. Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company of Randolph, Wisconsin, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer, and you are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Dick Zondag of the Jung Seed Company today on this edition of Garden Talk. Thanks for listening in. We have, I think, one open line. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Larry in Kingston is next. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Dick. Hi, Larry. We have a problem with our tomato plants every year, especially the cherry tomatoes.
Okay.
Just about, you know, the day before you want to give them one more day to grow, to get a little more redder, and then the skin splits. And, you know, we still use them for, like, chili and stuff, but it's such a disappointment. Is there anything you can do about that?
Well, the skin splitting, there are a couple of things that can cause that. Do you water your tomatoes at all?
Yes.
Okay, well, stop watering them. If they take up too much water, that can cause the skin to split. The other thing that can do that is if you don't have enough calcium in the soil. So what I would do is lime the soil in the area where you're putting your tomatoes in. And if we've got good natural rain, the extra water really isn't necessary. They really like to grow at their own speed. And tomatoes are one of the crops that if you over-fertilize, they tend to go, especially with the nitrogen, they tend to go mostly to vines and leaves. And when they're vigorously growing, they tend to do that also. So I would say cut back on the fertility, maybe give them a little bit of lime, and cut back on the watering.
Well, I always put lime every year, so it must be the watering that we've been doing.
Yeah, probably overwatering.
You may want to try some of the newer varieties, too. I don't know. Do you know what variety you're using?
Not really.
Okay. No. I would try the Sweet Million or the Sweet Baby Girl. Both of those are excellent cherry-type tomatoes that are newer and may be less susceptible to the cracking.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Larry, for calling. Bill in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. Was wondering, is there availability of either a sterile form of a chestnut or horse chestnut?
Boy.
That's a good question.
I'm not sure. I mean, what you'd want to look for is like a double flowering tree. I can't say that. I mean, I'd have to check. And maybe it would be a good idea to just drop me a line at dick@jungseed.com, and I'll go through some of the nursery supplier catalogs that we have to see if there is a sterile horse chestnut. But, boy, it doesn't
love
come.
Love the tree, hate the
yeah,
nuts.
Yeah. Sometimes they come up with a double flowered variety of a tree sometimes, and the double flowering, usually the double part of it is the the stamens have differentiated into petals instead of into stamens, and sometimes those are sterile. But boy, right off the top of my head, I can't say that there is one. But like I said, my email address is dick@jungseed.com. Very simple. Drop me a line, and I'll do a little research and see if I can find out if there is one or not.
All right.
I have one other question. I was wondering why you guys went with the Anglicized pronunciation of your family name all of a sudden.
It was to differentiate us from the farm seed part of the business. And I guess the other part of it is that when you think about Young, where would you look for it in the telephone book if you didn't know it was J-U-N-G? And so I guess that's kind of why the two reasons that we've Americanized that German Young. So on the farm seed part of the business, it's still Young Seed Genetics, and on the horticultural side, we say Jung Seed Company.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Thank you for calling. And Frank in Port Edwards, it's your turn next. Hi, Frank.
Good day, gentlemen.
Good day.
I just came in from raking the leaves out of an ancient pachysandra bed.
Okay.
Now, last year, between the drought and the scales, which got away from me because I was having some health problems last summer, there's an awful lot of old black dead vine stems in there.
Okay.
I'm wondering about whether I'd make a mistake to just go in and clip everything off that right back down to the ground, unless it was already a short stem that looked pretty good.
And no, there would be no problem with that at all, because pachysandra, although it's evergreen, keeps its leaves most of the time during the wintertime. If you take a hedge shears and just cut off the top foliage, pachysandra grows by underground stems, and so what that would do is it would encourage those rhizomes to sprout up and to take over. So if you've got spots that look bad, that would be a good way to renew it. Just take a hedge shears or a lawnmower, but you know, a lawnmower might do that too.
Yeah. I used to be able to get a systemic insecticide called Merit, and I can't find it anymore.
Yeah, we have Merit in our garden centers.
You do, eh?
Yeah, there's a Bayer product called Tree and Shrub.
That's the one.
Yeah, that particular one has Merit in it. Now, Merit is not inexpensive, but it's one of the few systemic insecticides that you can still use. And works on roses, and it works on birch trees for the birch leaf miner. But we have it in our garden centers.
Well, I'll go by Stevens Point on the way up north the next time and fix them
okay.
up.
All right. Yep, thanks, Frank. Matt in Springbrook, your turn. Hi, Matt.
Good afternoon.
Good morning, it is.
I've got a couple questions about some leeks, some onion sets, and some carrots.
Okay.
Now, the leeks, I started them in a flat back in probably middle of February.
Okay.
And what I've been doing to keep, I've been keeping them shaved down to like 3 inches.
Okay.
Is just kind of fatten them up.
That's not a problem.
Okay, and I'm a little confused on the planting directions I seem to have been reading on about.
With leeks, you want to plant them about an inch or two deep, because you either have to mound them up so that you get those the stems blanched, because you've got to cut the sunlight out. There are also some people that will use black plastic, they'll tie black plastic up along the row to kind of blanch the leeks out so that they get nice and white.
Okay.
That's the way I would do it. I'd plant the leeks probably 6 inches apart.
Okay.
And use regular garden fertilizer on them. Don't use anything with too much nitrogen, and you should have no problem.
Okay. Now, on like the onions and carrots, it's a similar question. For the space I got, and in order for me to get what I need to crowd them.
Okay.
Now, with onions, they say about 3 inches apart.
Yep.
And I don't remember exactly what the roll width is, but with both of them, what I did, I haven't got them, the carrots in yet, but I dug the bed really deep.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of compost.
Right.
And the onions in the rows. I mean, the rows are only 3 inches apart, let alone, you know, just as far out as I can reach to right. handle them. Now, the carrots, they say 1 to 2 inches apart, and on the one packet, it says no more, the rows should be no more than 12 inches apart. And to get what I need, I kind of need to bring them rows in.
Well, what you're going to find is that with the onions, if you do it right, the onions are going to be touching each other and kind of pushing each other out of the ground. So in my own garden, I plant 3 rows together, and I plant the plants about 4 to 6 inches apart and kind of zigzag them.
Okay.
Yeah. The reason that you want to have some space between them is that you need to be able to weed the onions, and so you've got to be able to physically get at them. You can plant them, I mean, 6 inches apart all the way through, but then if you get weeds in there, how do you get the weeds out?
Right.
And with the carrots, you want to have them, you know, you plant them much thicker, and I always put some radishes in with my carrots when I plant them, because the radishes act sort of like a nurse crop, where break the ground and they kind of mark where the carrots are going to be coming up so that you can keep that area weeded. And then when the radishes come up, you pull them out, and then the carrots follow behind. The reason you want the carrots about 2 to 3 inches apart is, depending on the type of carrot you get, whether you have the Nance or the, you know, the size that they get. If they're the type that don't get the big diameter, they're not the slicer, the dicer types. If they're the slicing types, you can plant them probably 2 inches, or you can thin them down to 2 inches apart, and they'll be just fine. But if they're thicker than that, what you'll find is that the carrots won't develop the diameter that you need.
Yeah.
Okay. But the row, the distance between the rows shouldn't be...
I would say a foot is about as close as you want to do, because as those tops start to grow, they're going to have room to pick up the sunlight. And if you
okay.
plant them much closer than 12 inches, you're going to have the tops kind of...
Overlapping
each other. So
okay.
I would say 12 inches would be the closest that I would plant rows apart.
Okay. Can I ask one more quick question?
Okay.
I like peas, and I do have radishes in, and... They've been in about a week, and my soil has a tendency to, it's a little on the sandy side, it's been drying out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not getting the germination, and the radishes got me a little spooked, because they should have been up and gone by now.
If you've only had them in a week, we've had really cold weather.
Okay.
I wouldn't be too nervous yet.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you.
Yep.
Yep, thanks, Matt. Pat in Eau Claire, it's your turn now. Hi, Pat.
Hi there. I have a question about yucca.
Okay.
I have a yucca that's maybe 10 years old.
Okay.
In the first 3 or 4 years, I got big, tall, beautiful bloom. And then now nothing, but I've got a lot of suckers. Is there any way I can get that to ever bloom again?
Okay. What happens with yucca is the whorl of leaves that bloom only bloom once. Once the center has thrown out a flower, that particular whorl is done. And what a yucca does is it throws those little pups out, and then they have to grow until they get to be a certain size. They have to reach a critical mass, so to speak, and then they'll throw their flower out, and then they'll throw more offsets off. And so that the ones that usually once they start flowering, there are enough of those little offsets in there that they just keep flowering. So... don't over-fertilize a yucca. It's a desert plant. It likes dry areas, so you don't want to overwater.
I've never watered. I've never fertilized, but it's like 5 years I haven't had a bloom.
Okay, and are the rosettes getting larger in size each year?
Well, I don't know. I haven't looked. I mean, I didn't know that was what I needed to look for.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens. They grow in size, and when they get to a certain size, then they throw out a flower. But at the same time, they're throwing these offsets off. So they'll, in front of my dad's house, they planted yucca around one of the light posts, and that bed is about 6 feet in diameter, and it's just absolutely packed with yucca plants. And it seems like every summer there's flowers there, and it's because Yes, they've got little ones, you've got medium-sized ones, and you've got big ones growing in the same bed. And the big ones will flower, but then they'll be throwing off more offsets. And it seems like once they're root-bound and they're kind of under a little stress, plants tend to flower better when they're under stress. And so, you know, hopefully you've reached that critical mass now. You may want to go out and do a little root pruning to put them under a little more stress. Just take a shovel and just dig up the soil around in that area. Maybe that'll help. Make up their mind to flower.
But, and if I want to get rid of it, I probably have to use dynamite, right?
Probably, because they have a pretty extensive root system, and the plant itself is pretty woody.
Right.
So, you know, maybe go around the bed and do some root pruning, and maybe that'll encourage them to flower.
I'll try it. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Pat. Mary in Whitewater, your turn now. Hi, Mary.
Thank you. I have a couple questions.
Sure.
One is about yellow azaleas, and the other is about your catalog system.
Okay.
I just purchased two yellow azaleas, knowing that azaleas need acid soil.
Right.
And I have an acid area that I'm working on with blueberries and wintergreen. So
okay.
I hope to put these there. My largest yellow azalea is about 14 inches tall.
Mm-hmm.
And it is called Northern Highlight.
Okay.
I believe it was raised in Minnesota.
Right. It was one that was bred in the Minnesota Arboretum.
Okay. It requires full sun,
right.
Which shocked me.
Yeah, I tend to disagree with that a little bit.
Okay.
I would say that azaleas and rhododendrons, where they grow naturally, is on the edge of woods. And
uh-huh.
so they like
yeah.
to have some sunlight. I mean, they can't be in deep shade, but
yeah.
they also like to have shade, too. So if you've got them where they can get morning sun and afternoon shade, or morning shade and afternoon sun, or if they're growing in the shade of a tree or something like that, the azaleas tend to do better there.
Well, that's what I thought. So I wanted to put that in an area where you get a little bit more shade.
Right.
But the full sun really threw me. Also,
well, they will grow in full sun, but they like...
prefer a little shade.
They prefer a little shade, right?
All right, and then it says nothing about the pH, which
right.
blows
it
my mind.
Should be acid. And you do that by you can use aluminum sulfate, which will make your soil sour very fast.
That's what I've been doing.
But
I also use sulfur.
Yeah, you use the aluminum sulfate once or twice, and then you discontinue using it because
uh-huh.
the aluminum ion, although it's a micronutrient, can also become toxic to the plant, and it will
uh-huh.
make the plant look yellow,
okay.
the leaves look yellow, and you think that the plant needs more acid, and so you put more aluminum on, and you're just multiplying your sorrow. So
all right.
once you've acidified with aluminum sulfate a couple times, by putting the sulfur in, what happens with the sulfur is it's broke down by the soil microorganisms into sulfite, and then it goes to sulfate, so it's making a weak acid area. And what you want to do is every... 3 to 5 years, just put a cup full of garden sulfur in that area and just work it into the soil. And that will be a slow release type situation where that'll keep it.
And I've already done that.
And then you can also tell from the color of the leaves. If the leaves are a nice dark green
uh-huh.
or at least they're growing well, then you don't have to worry about the acid. But if you can start seeing the foliage yellowing, and the veins are green, and the foliage itself has sort of a lighter cast to it.
Uh-huh.
Muir acid is a good fertilizer
okay,
to
yeah,
use, too.
I had that.
And it's not because it makes the soil acidic. It's because it has the nutrients in that the plant needs, the manganese and the iron, to make those good green leaves.
Okay. My other question was about, actually it was yellow rhododendron, and I just received it from Jung's yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and it's your Capistrano.
Okay.
And it's a product of Canada. And there's nothing, there's no instructions with it.
Oh, really?
Either about light or pH. And I was wondering if you've got any information on that.
Same thing with those.
Okay.
The same situations that the azaleas would go in, and blueberries and the wintergreen are excellent for the Capistrano.
Okay, good. And then my other question about your cataloging system. I get a lot of catalogs from Randolph.
Yeah, you do.
Are they all your... Are all these plants from the same warehouse? Do you all use the same warehouse and just have a different catalog name?
Some of them are and some of them aren't. I mean, there are some of the catalogs we buy larger plants for because they are more expensive. But Some of them aren't also, but if they have a Randolph address on them, they're ours.
So if I buy something from, what, McKenna Zimmerman, I'm
McLaurin
also
Zimmerman
from
is
you.
One of our upscale catalogs, and we have a different area for picking for McLaurin Zimmerman than we do for Jung, and also for Roots and Rhizomes, which is our perennial catalog, our more upscale perennial catalog. In most cases, those are coming out of a different area.
Okay, but if I buy, I have bought from them. When I buy from them, you're receiving some profit from it then, too.
Yes, I am.
Okay, I just wasn't sure, because when I made my first purchase from Jung's, then I was flooded with all these other catalogs.
Yeah, well, what we do is we don't send every Jung customer every one of our catalogs. We do go into our database, though, and if you buy peppers or tomatoes from Jung's, you'll probably get a Totally Tomatoes catalog.
Uh-huh. Or, yeah, I got that too.
You know, if you buy flower seeds, you'll get a Seymour catalog.
Yeah,
or
I
if
do.
You buy perennials, you get, you know, you get a Roots and Rhizome. So
yeah,
we
do
cross market between our lists, but we don't send every catalog to every customer, because it would be a waste. And we don't like to waste resources.
Sure.
We don't like to spend the extra money. I mean, it costs money to print those catalogs and get them into your hands. And
yeah.
So we do some cross-marketing, but we don't try to overdo it.
Okay. Well, I've enjoyed them all.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And we'll turn to Pat here in just a minute. Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company of Randolph, Wisconsin, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking all things gardening today with Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company of Randolph, Wisconsin. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. If you'd like to join us, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. And Pat in Madison is next. Hi, Pat.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I live in rural Dane County on a hilltop, so it's very windy. And about 12 years ago, I planted quite a few Austrian pines, and they're pretty good size now for a windbreak. But this spring now, I'm noticing that a number of them have browned out, and I'm noticing some of the mogul pines around the house are doing the same. And I'm wondering, how do I figure out what's going on here, if it's a wind desiccation or if they got a disease, or what do I look for and what do I do with them?
Okay, well, the first thing you got to remember is that pine needles or any kind of evergreen foliage only lasts a year and a half to 2 years, and then it drops off, but then there's other foliage on the outside, so you usually don't notice it. We did have a lot of desiccation this winter, and so the needles that are brown usually don't come back. They'll drop off, but what you've got to watch for is the buds as the trees start to grow. If the buds expand, they'll cover that up. And it's a good idea to go out and fertilize them right now with a product like Muriacid or something that says evergreen fertilizer. Usually has iron and manganese in, because iron and manganese are the central part of a chlorophyll molecule that makes the sunlight and makes the evergreens good and green. So Muriacid is a good one, because the foliage can actually take part of the nutrients in also. As far as telling whether they're alive or dead, really the only way that you can tell is if the buds start to expand in that area, they're alive. If the wood is dark and brown and brittle, that part of the tree is probably dead. Now, with pine trees, what you'll find is as they grow in size, the bottom branches tend to be shaded out by the top branches. And so in most pine forests, when they get to be quite large, what you'll find is as the trees get taller, the bottom of the woods disappears because the branches will die. So I don't know, how tall are those Austrian pines?
Oh, they're 12 years old, so they're probably about 12 feet tall almost.
Okay, well then I would say that you're probably going to start seeing some of those bottom branches,
right,
especially on the north side of the trees, starting to die because they don't get enough sunlight. So
right.
I guess what
okay.
I would do is get some type of an evergreen fertilizer and fertilize around the drip line of the tree. That's where,
okay,
if water was coming off the tree was an umbrella, it's where the water would come off. That's where most of the feeder roots are. And so by fertilizing at the edge of the trees, that you're doing the most good.
Okay. I've heard there have been some Austrian pine disease problems or not in our area?
Yeah, there are some insects that have started to, and what you'll see is there'll be the shoot tips will be black with insects, and then you have to, I'm not sure what the particular pesticide you're using. You know, the problem is I could have told you 5 years ago what to use, but those particular insecticides are now gone. And so maybe, again, the dick@jungseed.com, I can look up and tell you exactly what insecticides would be most effective against those shoot moths. But, you know, if you just drop me a line, I'll email you back the answer.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. And Janet in Spring Green, it's your turn. Hi, Janet.
Hi, thanks a lot for having me.
Sure.
I have a couple questions. One on the catalogs that you were talking about. In the last few months, I moved from Mount Horeb to Spring Green, and so I didn't get a Jung's catalog this year. And when I called the store in the office in Randolph, they said they were all gone.
Yeah, they are.
But I got a whole lot of other catalogs, and most of them seem to be from Illinois and out of state. But one thing I noticed that every one of them had us listed in Zone 5. And I always thought this, even the lower part in the Mount Horeb Spring Green area would be Zone 4.
Yeah, I think for safety's sake, Zone 4 is where you are. There are some of the areas around Madison that probably get away with Zone 5 because of all the lakes and things in this area. But in the last few winters that we've had, especially 2 years ago and 3 years ago, I would say we were probably Zone 5 or Zone 6 in this area. But I think as a rule of thumb for this area, we probably should be thinking Zone 4 rather than Zone 5. Now, it doesn't mean that Zone 5 things don't grow here. There are a lot of beautiful perennials, and there are some other things that are Zone 5 that will grow in this area, but you have to take a little bit extra care. You have to either mulch the perennials a little deeper with hay and straw to protect them a little bit more, or you have to accept some losses if we have a really, really tough winter. So,
well, I like to get the catalog, but I usually do my shopping right at the store.
Well, we do collect names and addresses at the store when you check out, and if you leave your name and address, we do include those in all our mailings. So,
okay. Now, my other question is, at the house where I moved to, the front of the house is facing north, and it has about 5 globe arborvitae along the front of the house. It's a split or bi-level house, so the lower level is faced with brick. But those arborvitae are overgrown the sidewalk.
Right.
And they're all kind of leaning outward toward the, you know, away from the house.
Right.
I want to, and they're too tall now. They're,
right.
The front of the upper part hangs out over a little bit. Any suggestions on what to replace? I like a little bit of evergreen in there, but not something.
Yeah, the problem with arborvitae and most evergreens are that if they do get overgrown, you can really only trim arborvitae back to where the green ends.
Mm-hmm.
If you get much deeper than that, they really don't have the ability to resprout and to grow. And so with a lot of the arborvitae, once they're too big, you almost have to pull them out and put something new in. Now, if your house is facing north, arborvitae is not something that you should be using because they do have to have at least a half a day's sunlight to
grow.
Well,
the only thing they get is early in the morning and late in the afternoon.
I would suggest using Yews,
okay,
for evergreens on the north side of a house rather than arborvitae.
But is it something that would stay real small?
If you prune them, they do, yes. Yeah, you want to get some of the slower growing ones like the intermediate yew. So the spreading yew would probably be too big for your area, but you just have to talk with the people in the garden center and they can give you ideas on how big they can get. But with any of the yews, to keep them lower, you have to do pruning. And it's not hard to prune them. Yews are really easy to prune. So just a couple times a year, you go out with a head shears and cut the new foliage back a little bit, and they'll look very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want to cover the whole area with them. I just wanted to fill in between them with some.
Yeah. I mean, what you do is you figure out how big they're going to get, because even the dwarf yews can get 3 feet in diameter easily, or 4 feet in diameter. Mm-hmm. So you want to plan ahead a little bit. You don't want to plant them so that they look nice when you first plant them, because if you do that, they're going to overgrow. So you want to plant them with the idea that they're going to be much larger when they're at maturity. And if you want to plant things between them, I would say you want to plant them at least 6 to 8 feet apart, and then you can do the annuals or some of the ground covers or things between them.
Would they have different at the stores? Would they have different?
Yes, they do. They will. I'm not sure that the yews are in yet. Yews are something that we can't grow in Randolph because they burn when you have them out in the open. They get field burn, winter burn. So I think that most of the stuff is coming in because of the really unusual spring that we've had. We've delayed some of our shipments coming into the garden centers, but I stopped in Sun Prairie on the way in, and they were unloading a couple of trucks of nursery stock, some of the stuff that we don't grow on Randolph. So we're really... we're ready to go this week. At least I hope we are.
Thanks, Janet. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll take some more calls. Al in St. Germain is next. Al, hello to you.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I've got two questions. One, I've got a property, lake property, that I left pretty much wooded with red pines primarily, and some white pines and birch. And the ground cover is mostly just wild, no grass, little wild grass, some flowers that I don't know. When I go walking in the woods, I love to see these trilliums growing. And I know you shouldn't be picking them up digging them out.
Right.
Can a person buy trillium plants or seeds and these ferns that grow in the woods? I've got those too, but I want more.
Yes, we do. We do have both trillium and ferns.
Oh.
Yeah, we do. And
is it the same kind of trillium that grows in the woods, or
yes,
is it domestic?
No, it's the same type that grows in the woods.
You sell them by plants or seeds?
No, by plants.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the same way with the ferns. We have several varieties of ferns that will do very well in a pine forest.
Okay. Are you close to Eagle River, Monaco area? Or
No. The closest store that we'd have that's... to that area would be Stevens Point.
Okay, otherwise, can I get something like
yeah,
that
you,
through the mail?
Yeah, jungseed.com, or you can call our 800 number. Unfortunately, as one of the ladies that called before said, we are out of catalogs. So we don't have the current catalog, but we will have the fall catalog is being laid out as we speak, and so we'll be mailing out the fall catalog in the middle of June, and a lot of those things will be in that fall catalog. So you can either go online at jungseed.com, and there's an area in there for a catalog request, or you can call the 800 number, or you can go to the store.
Sure, what's the 800 number?
The 800 number is 1-800.
Okay.
574-574-3741.
3741.
At least I hope that's what it is. No, okay. I'm sure that's what it is.
I have one more question, and I don't know, this pertains to primarily red pine trees, some neighbors on the lake.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah,
that was the wrong 800 number.
Oh,
I was thinking it was the 247.
You're going to get the wrong office. It's 1-800.
Okay.
247.
247.
5864.
5864.
I'm sure Brenda would not appreciate that, getting all those calls.
Sure.
No, so it's 1-800-247-5864. That puts you into our call center that can enter a catalog request very easily.
Yep.
Okay, was it 5864?
Yes, yep. 5864.
Okay, thank you. I have one more question with regard to some neighbors quite a ways away from me on the lake. For some strange reason, 56-year-old primarily red pines died, primarily along the shoreline. And this takes about 2 to 3 properties, so they've got about a dozen trees that they had to chop down within a couple of years. They just turned brown, and they're not mature. I mean, they're only 50, 60 years old, you know, maybe 10 inches in diameter. Is there something going around with pine trees now, or what?
Not that I'm familiar with.
Okay.
No, I don't know of anything catastrophic happening with pine trees right now.
Okay, just isolated incidents.
I guess that's what it is. You know, when I used to do gardening classes, they would always preface the the class by saying, you know, it sounds like nothing will ever grow again when you talk about all the plant diseases and insects and things that can bother plants. But somehow, you know, plants are pretty stable things too. So, you know, once in a while you get a Dutch elm disease or an emerald ash borer, but most plants, if you keep them healthy and growing, they can ward off diseases, just like us when we get sick if we're not eating right or doing things that we shouldn't be doing. So,
yeah. One thing I am doing, and I went through the late 80s with dry spells, and so I lost quite a few birch. I bought, you know, the biggest pump I could from Fleet Farm, and I move about a gallon a second, you know, and I use a 2-inch fire hose, and I just made my own sprinkler out of pressure-treated wood, and I just irrigate whenever there's dry spells and stuff and just let it run.
Okay, but that's what you want to do, too. You don't want to just run it every day and put a little bit on. If it gets hot and dry, you want to run it for a while and then let it dry out between waterings, because even if you've got a sandy soil, if you're watering all the time, you're plugging up the soil pores with water, and that's a formula for disaster, because then you're going to get root rot diseases. And, you know, those roots have to breathe as well as the tops. And so if you're plugging up the soil pores with water all the time, you're asking for trouble. So, yep. I mean, do it once a week and then let it dry out between waterings.
Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company of Randolph, Wisconsin. If you have a question for Dick, feel free to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And Jackie in Milwaukee is online, so let's go to Jackie. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning, and it's not just the catalog. Everybody should order the cookbook.
Ah, yes.
Wonderful. It was just wonderful. I'm not going to be able to make everything. But my question is about burning bush. Over the years, we lived here from maybe 50 years, and there were a lot of trees, and I tried a burning bush, the big one.
Right.
And it never got red. Now I have discovered dwarf burning bush.
Right.
Will that work as a hedge?
Dwarf burning bush will work as a hedge, but what you'll find, and I guess the professor that I had here always recommended it. The only problem with burning bush is it's a very brittle wood, and so if you plant it near a place where you're going to get a lot of snow, you may get some breakage from that. Now, the dwarf burning bush is not as brilliant red as the standard burning bush,
but it's colorful.
Yes, it is, and it has those nice dark green leaves in the summertime too. And then the winged twigs in the wintertime. Now, my suspicion is your burning bush was probably in the shade.
It was.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that you didn't get fall color, because burning bush in full sunlight is as dependable for fall color as you can get. But if you've got it in a shaded area, and you'll find that true of any plant that has a good fall color, if you've got it in shade, you'll never get the full expression of the fall color.
And how far apart would I plant them? They're going to be along the north and south edge of our property, and I'd like them as a bush.
Okay, if you want them as a hedge, I would plant them probably 2 feet apart.
Okay.
And that way they'll stay, you know, full foliage to the ground. If you don't mind having a little bit of open space when they get up a little ways, you could probably go 3 feet apart, but I wouldn't go much farther than that.
But even if they don't get real red, I read something about the colorful yellow or whatever, or berries. I don't know. I've ordered quite a few from your catalog, and I'm waiting for them to come. And do they require any kind of special fertilization or anything?
Not really. I mean, you want to use some fertilizer when you plant them, and if they come bare root, you want to soak them in water for 24 hours and then put a root stimulator with them, or a little bit of fertilizer, something to get them off to a good start. But no, there's really nothing special about burning bush. You don't need acid soil. They grow in pretty much any kind of soil, but you want to keep them fertilized because then they'll grow nice. And the other thing, too, is if they start to get quite large, you want to start pruning them before they get large so that you keep the foliage near the ground. So each year as the foliage comes out and it gets about 6 to 12 inches of growth, you want to cut it back a little bit just so that you keep them well branched and nice and thick, especially if you're going to use it as a hedge.
Yeah, but that color is going to be welcome. Thank you much.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. Edna in Waupaca, your turn. Hi, Edna.
Oh, good morning. Or is it good afternoon? I'm not sure. Anyway, good morning, Dick.
Good morning.
I'm calling about wisteria.
Okay.
I had one a few years ago that my daughter had given me from Minnesota.
Right.
And it grew. It was beautiful over my arbor here. But no blossoms. Never had blossoms. And I kept it protected, and then about the third winter, it got winter kill, and that was the end of it. A friend of mine has a beautiful wisteria one right over her porch, and she gave me some all the pods. It has the blossom, it has the peas, you know, the
right.
Thing. Anyway, I took them out, and I planted them, but I don't see anything coming up. But I'm wondering, can you buy or do you have any wisteria plants at all?
Yes, we do. We sell wisteria.
Oh, you do?
Right. And the way that you make wisteria or any vine that doesn't like to flower is as the plant starts to grow, you braid the vines together near the ground. And the braiding of the vines, what happens is as they grow in diameter, they kind of restrict the growth. They put the plant under a little bit of stress.
Okay.
Now, the problem with wisteria, if you just plant it and let it grow, it grows like crazy, but it never gets into its adult flowering stage. So you want to braid the, just like you'd braid hair, you braid the vines together, and you don't have to braid them up very high. Maybe a foot of braiding will do it, and then just let them grow. And then as the plant grows in size, those things will restrict the growth a little bit, and it will put it into its adult flowering stage. It usually takes about 3 to 4 years before you'll see the first flowers.
Oh, I'll have to stop by and get some. And just quickly, Dick, I wanted to tell you, Miss Dorothy Vedder, I'm her cousin.
Oh, really?
And she always talks so wonderfully about you. So,
thank you.
Anyway.
Thank you, Edna.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call very much. And
you'd almost think that was my mother.
Dale and Animal. Dale and Animal, it's your turn. Hi, Dale.
Yes, I have a question about calanchas. They haven't bloomed for like a year, but they've gotten really tall and thick, real dark green. What can you do to get them to bloom again?
Okay, boy. I'm not exactly sure, but what I would say is cut back on the fertilizer.
Oh, we don't use any.
Okay.
We get water.
The other thing, and I'm not sure, again, dick@jungseed.com, and I'll look it up, but I'm not sure if they have a photo period requirement, but, you know, it's kind of like the Christmas cactus. They have to have a dark... uninterrupted light for a certain amount of time before they bloom. So I'm not sure what the trigger to calanchas flowering is, but I can look it up in some of my reference books and see once if I can find something for you. But it may just be as simple as a photo period adjustment.
Also, I have a question about will the hydrangeas that we planted last Easter, will they come up again, or do they have to be brought in the house?
It depends on the hydrangea that you have. Most of the florist-type hydrangeas that you get at a florist shop are not hardy enough for our area. And so if you plant them outside, they're probably dead.
Okay, and if you bring it, you could bring it back in, though?
Yeah, what you want to do is just plunge the pot right in the ground and grow it outside that way. And if it's really root-bound, you may want to get a little bigger pot and repot it before you put it outside. But then... in the late fall, before you get the hard freeze on it, then you bring it out and bring it inside, and it'll blossom.
And how do you keep, like ours is a real rich blue, the one we have in the house, how would you keep that so it doesn't turn a
pink?
Different color?
Yeah, you want, blue is acidic.
Okay.
So you want to use there are different products that will acidify the soil, aluminum sulfate or elemental sulfur. We have a product called Ironate that really works good for keeping it.
Our soil is mainly... the clay where we plant stuff.
Yeah. And with clay, what you want to do is you want to add sand and organic matter. You know, you don't want to remove all of the clay and then plant your plants because then you're creating like a pot in the ground.
Yeah.
But you want to use at least half of the soil that you're taking out of that hole mixed with sand and peat or sand and compost. Put it back, and that way you're not creating a natural pot for your plant.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Big Bend next. Talk to Helen. Hi, Helen.
Hi, thanks for the show.
Sure.
Sometime this past year, I read it someplace about ever-bearing raspberries that could just be mowed off in the fall, and then they came up the next year.
Right.
Do you have those, and what are they called?
Yeah, we have. They're called ever-bearing raspberries.
Okay.
The life cycle of a raspberry is that it comes up the first year as a vegetative cane. In other words, it doesn't flower and fruit. And in August and September of the first year, the flower buds are laid down. With the ever-bearing types, they start blossoming and fruiting immediately. There's no dormancy involved with them. The older varieties didn't do it until much later, and so a lot of the flowers were carried through the winter. With the summer-bearing varieties, the flowers are initiated at the same time, but they stay dormant through the fall and winter, and then they blossom the next year. But with the ever-bearing varieties that we have now, they fruit early enough that we recommend that you just cut them off at the ground each year and only fruit them in the fall, because so much of the fruit is gone in the fall that there's very little left over for the summer.
Okay.
So you just the varieties would be like Heritage is probably the most popular of the ever-bearing raspberries, but we have one called Kiwi Gold, which is a golden ever-bearing raspberry, and they're very, very sweet. And then we have one called Autumn Britain ever-bearing.
So you don't get a July crop then?
No, you don't.
Okay. Yeah.
If you want some in July, then what I would say is plant some ever-bearing that you only fruit in the fall, and then plant some of the other varieties that are summer blooming. And the culture with those would be you just plant them, and then you let them grow, and you leave the canes. If you cut the canes off on your summer-bearing varieties, you'd never get fruit. You have to have the canes that grew last summer to get fruit this summer. But when they're done fruiting, you cut the canes that fruited out because there will be canes coming up between them for next year's crop, and you want to give them as much energy as you can. We have booklets that we send out with orders that will explain exactly how raspberries work.
Are purple raspberries still available?
Yeah, purple raspberries are, but they're different than the raspberries. They're not the type that throw out the adventitious buds. Those are the rambling type, and with the purple and the black raspberries, you tip layer them. You bend the tips over and put them underground, they'll root and they'll go again.
And how do you keep, if we have some wild black raspberries in the woods, how do we keep the tame ones from dying?
You plant them as far away from the blacks as you can, because the blacks and the purples are more disease-prone than the reds, but they seem to be able to handle the diseases. And the diseases will jump into the reds if you've got them near. Where if the reds are away from the blacks, they usually don't get the diseases. So,
okay.
All right.
So that's what I do is separate them a little bit.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ellen. And Jean and Hudson, on to you. Hi, Jean.
Hi. Say, thanks for having this show. I'm really enjoying it while I'm painting my living room here.
No.
My husband and I are both in our 60s now, and we just bought a home where there aren't many trees on it. We want to put some trees in. But when you're 60, you don't want to buy bare rootstock or, you know, really tiny things.
Mm-hmm.
What do you suggest for a fast-growing big tree?
Okay. What I wouldn't recommend is silver maple. That's a really bad tree. Brittle wood, shallow roots, but it is very fast-growing. Of the maples, I would recommend the Autumn Blaze, which actually is a hybrid between red and silver. Seems to have captured the good qualities of both of those trees. It is a little harder wood than silver, although it's still not a real hardwooded tree, but it grows fast and it has just brilliant red fall color. Another maple would be your Emerald Queen maple, which is a Norway maple, which is a medium fast growing tree. There's one called a Schwedler that's a pretty good one. Some of your lindens are very fast growing. The Greenspire linden, if you've got an area where you don't want a huge tree, that would be good. I wouldn't recommend ash because of the emerald ash borer. But honey locust is another one that you could plant that's fast growing, will give you nice filtered shade.
And probably a variety of those trees.
Yeah, right. And not all one kind, you know, different kinds so that you don't get monoculture.
Okay.
Because you never know. I mean, the maples, although there are no major diseases of maples, there are some maple diseases that make them sick. So, you know, as I said before, when you talk about diseases and insects, you wonder whether anything will ever grow because of all the things that are around. But the big thing with most plants is to keep them healthy, and they'll grow very well. So what I do, I mean, there are big bare root trees that are a little bit bigger than what we sell through the catalog. Of course, you can't send big trees through the mail, but you can get 2 and 3 inch trees for a pretty reasonable price that grow quite rapidly. The other thing with growth too is if you get hot, dry spells, the plants tend to shut down if they get too dry, and so, you know, keep the plants watered, keep them fertilized. And by net watering, I mean once a week you put you soak the ground and then you let them dry out. And that will also bring out the full potential as far as how fast that tree will grow.
Okay. Do you have any of the larger trees in Stevens Point?
Yes, we do.
Okay, great. Maybe I'll stamp over there. And one other thing, how about these oak hybrids and the poplar hybrids? I've heard that they grow fast.
The poplar hybrids grow very fast, but they're also weak-wooded, and the leaves are pretty big. We do sell some of those, too. I look at them more as a pasture tree than as a landscaping tree. People will use them for windbreaks, too, because they grow very rapidly, but they're not trees that I would plant in a landscape.
Okay.
The oaks, I'm not sure what hybrids you're talking about, but the problem with oaks are that they're a taproot tree, and you can't get a very big size tree because you can't cut that taproot, or the tree sits still for 4 to 6 years before it has to reestablish the taproot before it starts to grow. So I would stay away from oaks if you're looking for fast growth.
Great. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Thanks, Jean. Lisa in Clear Lake, hi to you.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Larry.
Sure.
I've got a question about gooseberries.
Okay.
I've had gooseberries for like 20 years, and they have blossoms, but they don't fruit. And I'm wondering if I need a cross-pollinator.
That's probably what you're missing now.
Okay.
Gooseberry, are you in the northern part of the state?
Yeah, Clear Lake.
North Central, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it's legal to plant gooseberries in your area. Gooseberry is the alternate host for white pine blister rust, and so
yeah,
you've got to be careful. But cross-pollination will help.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling. Sue in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Sue.
Hi, thank you. I have a problem with some creeping Charlie.
Yeah.
I have a very beautiful perennial garden. We've spent a lot of time and energy nursing this garden along, and we've inherited some creeping Charlie from plants that we got from some friends.
Yeah.
Now, instead of fighting it, if we just let it go, what I'd like to know is, will it kill out any of my perennials that are already in my garden?
Probably. There's nothing more aggressive than creeping Charlie.
Uh-huh.
And especially if it's a low-growing perennial where it you know, can cover the perennial up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of those insidious weeds that you get in most lawns, and you really do have to take care of it, especially in a perennial area, because if it gets into an area where it has no competition from grass, it just goes wild.
And that it has, yeah.
The only thing I can suggest is taking a paintbrush and Roundup and paint the foliage of the Creeping Charlie with the Roundup and not the perennials. You can't just take a sprayer and go in there, because if you spray the perennials with Roundup, you'll take them out too.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're careful about where you put the, you know, where you paint the foliage, that might help you control Creeping Charlie.
Okay.
But it's very aggressive. It's very aggressive, and in a perennial garden, it'll just take over.
Oh, great. Okay.
Okay.
All right, we'll try that. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Brian in Waterloo, your turn. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you guys today?
Great.
You had a gentleman call in about
the red cedars or red, the red pines that
red,
he,
red pines, I think, is what he said.
That were dying. More than likely what he has is bark beetles. I had red pines in my lawn, okay. And I got bark beetles in, and they wiped out every single pine I had.
Yep.
And there's really not much you can do with them, because by the time you realize you have them, they have already infested the tree so bad that it's going to die.
Yeah.
That could very easily be.
And the woman that just called in with the creeping Charlie?
Yeah.
Borax soap and water. You can spray it right on them, and it clogs the pores on the plant and kills it.
Yeah, I've heard of using borax on creeping Charlie. I'm not sure what it'll do on the perennials. But, yeah, it would be something worth trying in a small area, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, if you've got a something like that, if you're not sure how it's going to do, that's what I would do. And if it does take the creeping Charlie out and not the perennials, that would be good. But, yes, I have heard of borax and water working on creeping Charlie, too.
I tried it on a little patch of lawn because it's come up so often, and it eliminated the creeping Charlie. But I also know that you have to be careful. You can get a toxicity issue
from the boron,
and so it's not something you can continue to do, you know, time after time, because it's it'll kill your lawn too.
Yeah, boron is another one of those micronutrients that you need some of, but when a plant gets too much of it, it can become toxic to the plant.
It was amazing though.
Was it?
Oh,
I should try that, because you know, unfortunately, as I tell people when I go out to do talks and things like that, do what I say and not what I do. Don't come and look where I live.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, thanks. Bye. Yeah,
bye-bye. Appreciate the call. Bud in Wausau, hello to you.
Hello. I have a hobby garden. It's about 20 feet from a mature maple tree, and I also have an apple tree that's about 8 years old. It's about equal distance from my little garden. And what do I do to keep these hair-like roots?
In
fact, some of the roots come in as big as a pencil, and then they fan out, and I mean, it's just thick with these tiny roots in my garden. I was hopeful you'd tell me to dig a trench and put down some plastic 3 inches or 5 inches or a foot deep or something. Or is there anything, a commercial product that I could use to keep these roots out of my little garden?
Boy, it's tough, because I have a flower garden under a maple tree, too, and every spring when I dig that garden up to plant it, you just take a whole wheelbarrow load of those fibrous roots up. Unfortunately, maple trees have a very fibrous root system, and they love the fertility and the extra water that you use when you're planting a garden. And so the barrier will help you a little bit. And the deeper you go, the more help it will be, because maple is a very shallow rooted plant, and it likes to keep its roots really near the surface. So by putting a railroad tie, not on its long side, you know, you're going to want to go 8 feet deep, but by putting it on its long side and you're going down 6 inches or so, that will help you a little bit. But they'll go underneath that tie, too, to get at that fertility and the extra water. So I'm sorry to tell you, but the tree has to go, or you'll be fighting it forever.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And, Dick, it's always a pleasure.
It's great to be here, Larry. I enjoy doing this, too.
It's a lot of fun to have you here, and we'll look forward to another visit from Dick down the road here. Dick Zondag, president of the Jung Seed Company of Randolph, Wisconsin, celebrating 100 years in business this year. Well, just to let you know, coming up on Monday, we'll be talking with Professor Jim Boffman, chair of the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Journalism. And he'll be talking about his book on early television. I'm reading it right now. It's called Same Time, Same Station. It's a fun book, and so I'll be happy to talk with Jim about that. And then on Monday at 11:45, we'll have the return of the weather guys. Steve Ackerman and John Martin will come by to talk about what's going on climate-wise and weather-wise. And don't forget, if you want to pledge online, go to WPR.org, make a pledge, and help us reach our goal of $275,000. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.